Hi, I'm Landon. I'm a critical care transport nurse, and I work at a large teaching hospital emergency department.
My name is Alan. I'm a staff nurse at a large teaching hospital.
Hi, my name is Monique, and I am an emergency nurse practitioner at a large teaching emergency department.
And I'm Lori. I'm a nurse leader in a large teaching hospital and in the emergency department and also in the ICU.
Great. So today we're going to have a little bit of a facilitated discussion and ask some questions and really try and explore some concepts around EPIC mainly and facilitation. So first question I have is, what's your opinion on the difference between facilitation versus instruction?
Yeah, well, I'll start.
Yeah.
I think, instructing is sort of what we think about when we think about going to school. And it's really an instructor imparting knowledge on students. It's sort of a one-way dialogue. And I think facilitation is a little more dynamic. There's more dialogue generally between the students. And the facilitator is there to ask questions from curiosity and stimulate conversation.
It's almost like a conductor of an orchestra, don't you think?
Oh, that's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I like that.
Because your participants are all, in theory, facing you and thinking you are giving the information. But facilitating is, you're like, okay, well, maybe the people to my right need to speak up a little bit. They have something to contribute. And then the attention then turns to them. Kind of like the violins in a solo, for example.
I kind of like that.
I really do.
Yeah.
Me too.
I think the other thing that I think about is a philosophy when I used to be the educator. When I think about a quote that I read long time ago by Robert Louis Stevenson, and it said, education is not about filling a pail, it's about lighting a fire. And I think that really, for me, encapsulates the difference, because in instructing, you feel like you're filling this empty pail, you're giving information and filling up something. Whereas if you're lighting a fire, you're actually creating an opportunity for people to shine, for them to kind of step up into the light to share what they know, and we all learn from that. And so I kind of like that concept about the difference.
Absolutely. And I think when you're going into sites you've never been to, it's really good to acknowledge what people already know, because these people are coming with knowledge and experience.
What I really like about it is, I've been known to say this a lot, is when people come together, they're a community. And what I don't like about traditional instruction type of things is as you said, Lori, it's a one-way dialogue. And it's always annoyed me. It's like, why am I taking my time to come and sit in a room with 24 other people and none of us are talking to each other?
Yeah.
We're sitting here listening to one person just talk at me, not to me, at me. And why did I have to come here for this? I could watch this online. And so I know for sure with EPIC, one thing we really envisioned was whenever the community is together, leverage that. So that's like lots of small group. Even if we're in the big classroom, there's small groups in the big classroom learning from each other. And I think for me, that's a big definition of facilitation, is there's people around you. Let's be interacting, not all sitting in rows looking at each other, because I can do that at home.
It's like the perfect segue to team dynamics, right? Where we should all be contributing to the shared experience of taking care of a patient.
Totally.
And I think that that's what I like about having these kind of classroom or case-based learning within EPIC, is that we have that muscle memory of this is how we can get a team to work really well, and then we want them to translate that because we're mimicking it or role modeling it, so that when it happens in their clinical setting, that they're demonstrating that, so they take that forward. So I love that we have that team dynamic, and when the team doesn't function well, that we have that great conversation about how could we do this better in a really respectful, non-threatening way, real safe environment for them to learn in. So I love that about it too.
Can I ask you a question, Lori?
Yeah.
Because you love the concept of people being uncomfortable.
Listen, she made me uncomfortable when she wrote this list out that we had to cover all these things. Come on.
I know. It's an organic discussion that Lori, of course, being the only intensive care nurse in the room.
I love challenging y'all.
But in all seriousness, Lori, you do like making people uncomfortable in a learning situation, which is different than we've all been taught of make it very warm and fuzzy and that kind of thing. And I love watching you when and I'm uncomfortable. It's not insulting or anything, but I'd love if you can explain that a little bit, because you are becoming known for your like of uncomfortable learning.
Right.
And what you know about that.
Mm. Perhaps that awkwardness is just something that comes natural. But in a facilitating kind of context, I've been in situations where I have just felt uncomfortable, and almost always that's where my greatest learning has come from. So when I'm challenged, when I'm uncomfortable, I know that something isn't the status quo and that I need to pay attention and there's something there for me to learn. And I think healthcare, what we do often is we support each other really mm-hmm. well, but we don't often talk about the elephant in the room, or we don't often say, how could that have been better? Instead, we try and smooth things over. And I just think some of our greatest learning is when we're really humble, when we're vulnerable, and when we're willing to learn from each other and from our failures, really.
Thanks.
What would you say, Alan, about that? I think you kind of enjoyed that. You're certainly somebody who kind of enjoys. Well, you're certainly awkward.
Yeah. I think I'm the sultan of awkwardness. But I think what comes alongside awkwardness is honesty as well.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're honest, you become vulnerable. Mm-hmm. To what degree of vulnerability you'll let in, you're still willing to, whether it's voluntary or not, you're willing to soak something up in that moment, and you won't forget it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what the power is of this course, is in addition to having these rich, visceral learning opportunities, is that the art of facilitation is you're genuinely, the facilitators are genuinely interested and what the learner is thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Rarely do you hear that list the five reasons why you would have acute coronary syndrome.
Yeah.
It's, well, tell me more. What were you thinking in the moment when you wanted to give aspirin?
Mm-hmm.
You would be surprised at what people were genuinely thinking. And I think that's where all the learning truly comes from.
I kind of like to think about it the other way around, too. I'm surprised Landon hasn't said how old I am. Or made some reference about it, but
back in 1847,
yes,
when
she was
helping
Florence
light
yes.
her lantern.
But in education, I think old school education, being made to feel uncomfortable in the change of the way education has gone from being, I've got all the knowledge, I've got all the control, to giving up that control and facilitating as opposed to just teaching, has made me uncomfortable initially and challenged. And when I reflect on how that has taught me so much about a better learning environment for everyone, I really can support that philosophy within the course itself, especially when I reflect on how much I've learned about myself and being uncomfortable in certain situations. I think that's great.
I like that point, and I find that it's translated really into my practice. And whereas teaching, I feel I always had to know it
more.
All
yeah.
and tell people. Mm-hmm. And if I tell people what I know, then they will know I'm competent.
Yes.
And facilitation, and we struggle with that definitely as emergency department staff. You,
mm-hmm.
you show up at a new place or even get moved to a new area, suddenly you have to prove yourself again. And how do we prove ourselves? A lot of us are type A. We prove ourselves with our mouths
mm-hmm.
and telling people what we've seen and what we've done. And instead of taking that silent backseat and just doing the work and allowing your actions to show that you are competent, that you're caring and kind and that. And I feel that with facilitation as well. It is a hard shift, and I think
mm-hmm.
it's important that our new facilitators know that. It's a really hard shift
mm-hmm.
to leave a course
mm-hmm.
after a day or two
yeah.
and actually think to yourself, I said about 10 words.
yeah.
I didn't. Because it's hard, because we
mm-hmm.
are the educators. We are supposed to say, I taught them a lot. And to be quite honest, there are courses where you leave and you go, I sat people down at the end and I said, so how did that go? And 40 minutes later, a conversation ended and I said nothing more. And the depth of the discussion and what they got out of it was exactly what they needed to get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a difficult transition. We've learned, and the four of us sitting here have, you know, more than 50 years of teaching experience amongst all of us.
Yeah, 49 for me and the rest of you here.
The rest of us just started. But it is a hard transition, and I think we'd be wise to let people know that it is. It's a part of that uncomfortableness is, I left and I didn't say anything. They must not think I'm smart. They must wonder why I'm even teaching this because I asked one question. Mm-hmm. But that's the gift of facilitation. But being able to fill the void when the conversation either A, goes sideways, or B, you're with a group that actually lacks that knowledge.
It's quite fascinating. And you almost build like this camaraderie, or you almost build like a team together. So it's no longer that top-down dynamic. It's like, as cheesy as it sounds, it's like a journey almost. It's quite satisfying. It's very rewarding. Very rewarding. I think for both parties.
I think so too. Yeah.
Maybe someone talk about kind of using high fidelity.
Because we live in a very high tech world, and I think we talk a lot about our philosophy of the difference between high tech versus high fidelity.
Yeah.
Why are you looking at me? Because he knows that I'm the diva that likes the high fidelity piece.
Sure.
I think I do, and probably because I'm probably the least techie person here. And I think in today's world, we do have the opportunity to have lots of technology. And I think within the program itself, we haven't limited people that if you do have some technology that you can access to deliver the same content, we're not adverse to you using it. I think the value of having that high fidelity of some of the facilitators acting as the patients or acting in different roles really drives that reality piece up quite high. I certainly know that, you know, in some of my scenarios, if I'm seizing, for example, you can feel that the volume in the room get a little bit more anxious where they're, you know, running at me, trying to turn me over quite vigorously. And it feels very real to them, and it feels really real to me as well, and they interact with me that way. Or if I pretend that I'm not breathing, they actually try to bag me. And if I try to push the mask, they really, you know, cramp it on my face. And I think, wow, they have bought into it. So I think the high fidelity piece allows them to buy into the scenario far easier than sometimes simulation with the technology does.
Yeah, I remember something that Shannon Chestnut, who's a physician sim facilitator here where we are, said to us. And she said, I can take a pillow and put it on the floor and do the best high fidelity neonatal resuscitation with that pillow because of the environment I build around it.
Yeah.
And I can take a $50,000 sim doll and make it the most boring experience ever, even though I have the technology and all the tools. And she really separated that. And I love that, you know, the way we've designed Epic is you don't need the $50,000 sim doll. You can just show up through the door and with some genuine emotion, bring that fidelity right in. And it's amazing watching students with live patients, how it, as you said, the intensity just rises. And they just did, the way we structure our courses anyways, we do that one after they've just had one with a doll.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
They're sort of getting into the rhythm with a doll, and you can just feel the energy of the morning starting to do that little dip before a coffee break, and then show up as a seizing person. I always dive on the bed or the table because I've briefed them, and then they're expecting a doll. I dive on the table, start having a full-on seizure, making snoring sounds, saliva coming out of my mouth, and you're right, they
really get into
it. Lose it for the most part because they're just not expecting it.
I almost feel like the truth comes out a bit more. This is
totally
how they truthfully.
This is them without a flow chart and trying to be all nice with their colleagues.
Absolutely.
This is where their true personality starts coming.
So those people who tell you, "Oh, I would never do that," and then you do something and they do it, They go, oh my word, I thought I never did that. But when I was faced with it, that's exactly what I did. Yeah.
Well, and it's so interesting to see how people react mm-hmm. in stress. And when you bring all that emotion, it creates stress.
Yes.
And that's real life.
Mm-hmm.
Emergency is not without stress.
That's right. And I think we've got a lot of hidden talent out there.
Yeah.
We've seen it. It's quite incredible. And I think that that's probably something that we learned on our journey. Land and I have been very fortunate to have seen Lori and Alan kind of grow and be in some of those first groups where some of the newer facilitators were, and what they've input to us and improved our course by them, those kind of innovative ways of looking at a scenario.
And those are the things you see every day,
right?
Every day.
Yeah.
Every day.
Okay, last thing. One difficult student situation you had.
Oh, gosh.
And how you dealt with it, and it doesn't necessarily need to be that you dealt with it effectively, because we're always all learning.
Exactly.
You know what? I think I'm going to start this one. I had the opportunity to facilitate learning for a learner who on the surface looked very disinterested and disengaged. And for those of you that know me, not only am I the sultan of awkwardness, but I'm also the prince of nerdiness, Landon being the king of nerdiness. So, and I would like to say that I'm a relatively upbeat guy. So our energy levels, myself and the learner, never met at a mutual level. I was always very high. She was very low. I tried to lower myself. I felt that she would not try to raise herself to a neutral level.
It's feeling awkward. I'm with
you. Yeah, right. It was so awkward,
and Lori loves it.
Yeah. And you know, I pulled everything that I could out of my experience. I asked questions from experts and mentors. I looked at resources on the internet. Just to try anything to engage this person. At the end of the day, this learner never got to where I expected them to get to.
Mm-hmm.
I was hoping that this person would come out of their shell. This person never got there. But at the end, this learner came up to me and said, "Thank you for making this interesting for me."
Oh.
And I thought to myself, oh, well, I felt like I failed to meet that, and mm-hmm. I was okay with that. I was perfect. I was ready to accept that. But I guess it's just that it's the camaraderie of this course that this course kind of builds, this culture of, you know, try your best, try different things, and don't be afraid to try them.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, I walked away kind of thinking, I kind of have a mixed bag of outcomes here, but I'm happy with what I did because I tried my best and I tried everything I could as a facilitator.
And the thing is, at the end of the day, you may have planted a seed
mm-hmm.
where the next time she is involved in something that she may actually, you know, or he, sorry, I didn't even, could maybe change the way they look at it. I think my challenging thing, and Lori has debriefed me, I think, on that, and we do give each other feedback, which is really helpful, I think, as facilitators, because that's how we grow. So we don't just debrief the participants. I think at the end of courses, we would really recommend, I think, from our learning, having each of us debrief one another and allowing yourself to have that time to reflect on what you've learned from the course itself. And Lori has said to me in the past, and I'm a bit of a cheerleader, it is hard for me to sometimes have that uncomfortable pause where somebody has to actually get into their head that they perhaps have things that they did not do well, and they need to come to that, whereas I probably rush to say, but it's okay, we love you and we'll be able to support you. And that's something that I've actually learned, and I'm way more comfortable at it now than I was at the beginning. And I did have a very difficult situation where There were two very strong personalities involved in a resuscitation sim, and they clearly did not like each other, and it certainly showed in the way that the resuscitation was managed. And I was there actually to mentor a new facilitator who really did not want to go there because it was going to be tough. But we did go there. We did stop and had a big debrief. And I think sometimes you do need to call people on, this is what I've noticed. And, you know, these are the things that I'm concerned about, because at the end of the day, it's about how well you function in a team. And if you need to know what you bring into that scenario. And so I think that discussion has to be, we have to make that discussion. So as much as it's nice to be supportive and want to facilitate things and feel that people need to get to a certain point, I do believe that we also have a responsibility. It is a course that people have to learn at. We do have a responsibility if there's something that's concerning about the practice or how that scenario went. We do need to discuss it. And they may not, I don't think either of them, well, one of them bought into it because she kept coming up to me subsequently in breaks and everything to have a debriefing. The other one, you know, was certainly not there yet. But was it necessary as facilitators to go there? Absolutely. And I think that was hard for me. But it needed to be done.
Great. Lori?
Yeah, I would say I just wanted to make a comment to Alan, is what I think with this course is you don't necessarily walk away with this great feeling of satisfaction, perhaps after the scenario or at the end of day one, because there's a lot of unknowns. But often day two or a couple days down the road, you get some sort of response saying, I really went home and thought about that, and I did have some learning, and so that's been interesting. For me, my experience was with one of my most challenging was with a know-it-all, and I have some experience with that personally.
Don't look at me when you say that.
But what was interesting was what was coming really to the forefront was that this person wanted to be right, and was coming from, I think, a place where they were maybe feeling insecure because they were an educator and with their students, with the people that they work with. And so my internal dialogue was much different than my outward dialogue. But what I was able to do was just rephrase the questions about, you know, acknowledging the expertise and then sort of asking, do you think or are there other ways that you could have a good outcome that aren't maybe the way you want to do the process of resuscitation or what have you. And so the interesting thing was he said, you know, he did come around and was able to say, maybe there are, and that's something I'll think about. And I was happy with that outcome. I didn't expect him to come over to the dark side of anything, but I was happy with that outcome. So it was just about rephrasing the question and about knowing that it's not about right, who's right. It's mm-hmm. just about getting people to think.
Excellent. I'm going to use a difficult situation versus student, because this was actually a fairly insightful student. It was one of our earlier courses, and we were in the, I guess we built this course not quite understanding the power of debriefing and mm-hmm. simulation and some of these unintended life lessons people are learning that came out. Yeah. It was not our intention, and here we are a few years later with what we have, and
having to bring a box of tissues into the
yeah, exactly. And don't be no, scared. No, no. Those exactly. of you listening, not everyone cries. Correct. It's yeah. it's just interesting to see some of the reactions. And this was an interesting reaction. This was a nurse. We were in a smaller community, and a nurse who'd been a nurse a long time in that community, and was obviously it had a power dynamic within the culture of that facility that she was one that people went to, but also one that people probably avoided. And on the second day at the end, and I hadn't really got the feeling from her of anything out of the ordinary, and she started right away at the end of the day evaluation session, and she said, so, and I I think I still start with this question, but back then I was like, what's one thing you learned today? And she right out of the gate said, today I learned I'm a bitch. And I stopped and my eyes got big. And I don't remember exactly what I said, but it was definitely not now, having a few years of experience with this, where now I would probably follow up with something like, tell me a little more about that. I'm knowing my personality, a bit of a rescuer like Monique, I probably said, oh, no, you're not a bitch. You're just, and probably came up with some bull crap that I made up. Like, you're just a strong personality who's very passionate, or I don't remember exactly. But it was such an unexpected situation, and mm-hmm. it will always sit there for me. And she then went on to talk about how she's, you know, for however many 30 years, been the one everyone goes to and felt she always needed to have the right answer, and just developed into this person who always having to have the right answer means nobody, I always need to be right. And so I just became right and just started telling people what was right. And it was this cycle that she just processed in her mind to where then everyone just turned to her, and her realization through probably about 20 minutes of her working through this with her colleagues sitting there, which was so impressive, mm-hmm. Was that she needed to step back more. And she had grown this whole generation of nurses in this facility who actually had no idea as to why they were doing what they were doing, because she always just told them what they were doing. And it was a difficult situation in that it took me blindsided.
Sure.
And I probably didn't communicate the most effectively at the time, but it's always stuck with me. And I tell people the story a lot. So like, always be prepared, always have your line.
Yeah.
When someone pulls the like personality 40 years this way card of what you're going to say, and mine mm-hmm. has just become, okay, well, tell me a little more about that, mm-hmm. or asking permission. Well, are you okay if I ask you a couple questions about mm-hmm. that? Because yeah, they are sitting in a room with four yes. or five other people. They, yeah. either do know really well or don't know. Mm-hmm. And so asking that permission of, can we talk about that a bit and tell me a little more about it? And it tends to go fine. Sometimes, you know, like Alan said, I don't get very far, and mm-hmm. this person worked her way through this whole thing, and you know, they're, I'm sure, didn't walk out of there and just revert back to how she was, because she had six people there holding her accountable for it now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was a difficult situation. And so my learning from that was always have your rescue line, and it's just one of those generic lines that allows them to start talking again and gives you 30 seconds in your mind to be going, oh my goodness, where are we going
yeah.
with this?
Yeah. Oh my goodness. That is the glory of this course, facilitation versus totally. Instruction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Totally.
Because you could tell her, hey, strong personalities can be translated as bitch, for example.
Exactly.
Or you can be, I'm a bitch. Hey, thanks for your honesty. Tell us more.
Yeah.
She tells you.
Yeah.
Not, and then on top of that, things that you can't quantify.
Yeah.
She's the in a leadership position. And look at that role modeling. 40 years of doing something and then has the vulnerability to say, hey, listen.
Totally.
I didn't yeah. realize this.
Yeah.
I looked at myself in the mirror and thought, what have I been doing? And you got six people that are holding her accountable mm-hmm. and also thinking, if that person allows himself to be like that, why can't I?
Yeah.
Totally.
Talk about grow, that is growing.
It wow. is. And to me, when I, you know, look, and people have said before, oh, well, there's no exam, so how do you know someone's learned?
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know what? Fine. Give her 48 out of 50 on an exam. That nurse learned something.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's actually going to change.
Change. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Practice,
yeah.
life, relationships yeah. with their oh. colleagues, maybe their family, like, and, you know, not to make this bigger than it is, you're not there to change everyone's life
no.
completely, but I would say that more often than not, doing this sort of facilitation versus instructing, I leave knowing that people, as you referenced to at the start, we've lit a bit of a fire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if one nurse reads one extra article that they apply to one patient and have a better outcome, that makes the whole thing
worth it.
Totally.
That makes the whole thing worth it.
Totally worth it.
5,000 yeah. nurses get 48 out of 50 on an exam.
Yeah.
That translates to, like, it's just harder to measure, I feel.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Absolutely.
So I think I would like to say one last thing, perhaps, to the...
Of course I would.
Because I always have to have the last word. Or maybe I won't, because I've got Lori here. We can talk about that later. Yeah, see, she's going to debrief me about having to take the last word.
Maybe we'll just keep the thing running and as we debrief.
Yeah, it'll be an example of debriefing. I think what one thing that I have certainly had the great privilege of traveling across this wonderful country of ours is being exposed to these amazing nurses and nurse facilitators who have stepped into this role. And I think that now that you are part of this, we do consider it a community and a family of facilitators, that we are all connected because we all believe in the value of what we can put into this situation, or how we can grow and how we can support people around us, being leaders and being role models in this lifelong learning. So now that you're part of this, that we do have this community, and it stretches across lines. It doesn't matter which hospital, it doesn't matter which province or territory, we are all, or language.
Or country. You've been to Ethiopia.
Yes,
already.
I have with it. So it's a wonderful, I think, organization to see the commitment and passion that the facilitators have for this type of platform. So thank you very much and welcome.
Excellent.
Welcome.
Welcome.
Welcome.